us with the love that Jesus loves us. That's actually in there too. By this will all men know that you're my disciples. Hey, you want to know how the world's going to know that you're a Christian? By the love you have one for another. That's what Jesus says. Now, most Christians don't really know this at all. Most Catholics, generally when they have in the past and in the present, go to a priest for the sacrament of penance, mention what they have done breaking the Ten Commandments. And I always love to say this, because most people have never thought it through. I didn't for most of my years. If you keep the Ten Commandments perfectly, all that means is that you're a good Jew, because they're not in the New Testament, they're in the Old Testament. You can keep the Ten Commandments perfectly and fail 100% to be a Christian. Because when you've kept them perfectly, then Jesus is saying, but there's one more. There's one thing more that I'm telling, not your ability to keep the Sabbath holy, not your respect for your parents, not the way you won't murder, won't steal. There's one thing that the world's supposed to look at you and say, she's a follower of Jesus, he's a follower of Jesus. And by this will all men know that you are my followers, the love you have one for another. So as Christians, our standard is, how far are we off the love that Jesus gives us? That's our standard. That's our standard of sin. To the degree that I don't love, first allow God's love in the way Jesus did, to the degree that I don't love myself 100% the way Jesus loves me, and to the degree that I don't love everyone the way Jesus in me loves everyone, that's the degree of my sin. And it isn't a nice thing. And please let me say, because maybe we didn't hit this carefully enough, love is not the absence of hatred. Not by Jesus' term. You have love, you have hate. In between, the absence of love is simply ignoring, not caring, by the standards of Jesus. The parable of the Good Samaritan. A man gets beat up, and a priest and a Levite pass that man. They're not loving by the standards of Jesus. They're not loving at all. Loving is a positive action, and when that isn't present, when I don't really care for you, when I don't swallow you into me, when I don't make your concerns mine, to that degree I am not loving, to that degree I am missing the mark that Jesus is offering me. Now, we have a second set of standards, because sometimes it's pretty difficult when we look inside ourselves to tell if we really care. There's a quick standard. To the degree that we have a lot of growth to make, we can use the Ten Commandments. Because if I'm breaking any of the Ten Commandments, then I'm definitely not loving. You know, if I'm in the process of murdering you, it's most unlikely that I'm loving you. If I'm in the process of stealing from you, it's most unlikely that I am loving you. If I'm in the process of ruining your reputation, it's most unlikely that I'm loving you. If I'm in the process of raping you, it's most unlikely that I'm loving you. So the Ten Commandments can give us a positive indication that we're not loving. But if we can go through those and still say, well, yeah, I haven't broken any of those, that does not mean that there's love in our life at all. We still then must ask the big question. How about love? We can still be filled with sin when not breaking the Ten Commandments. Sin, therefore, is a failure to respond to God's call. I've got to rephrase that sentence, to allow Him to love us. And on the basis of this love, to respond and love ourselves and love others. And to return as Jesus does then this love to Him. What are the effects of this failure? Sometimes it's so much easier to talk to people who have never heard a priest or a minister. This would be one of the points, times when I would like to do that. The effects of the... What's the effect of sin? But here's where Catholics my age, at least, and older, you almost can't do anything with us. Because we knew the old act of contrition that said, "Oh my God, I am heartily sorry. From all of my heart, I'm sorry because I have offended you." Therefore, what does sin do? What does sin do? Sin does offend God. I think I said grammatically correct. In any case, that's grammatically correct, but it is absolutely wrong. God cannot be offended. If every person in the world committed the worst sin they could tonight, God is not going to be heartbroken. Nor will he cry himself to sleep, nor will he rant nor rave in anger. God is filled with love. God is he who is in the process of loving. The death of Jesus shows us that God isn't offended, that God isn't angered by our sin. It shows that God responds to the need that our sin really calls forth. Sin, in its effects, doesn't touch God, or God stops being God. I want to show this in a physical way. If God loves me, Jesus comes into my life. I'm going to shut one half of the lights off so I can just have to work with the other switch. Then I go out and I murder somebody. God now hates me. Now I say I'm sorry. God's love comes back into my life. But I get mad at somebody else and murder them. God now hates me. And the lights inside me are off. And then I say I'm sorry and God's love comes back in. Who's calling the shots? Who's really the boss here? I am. I sin and I make God stop loving me. I say I'm sorry and I make God come back into my life. And if you ever carry that out through, we become gods and God becomes just our creature. And it isn't that way at all. There is nothing that you will do that will stop the light of love that God is placing within you from shining within you. You can put yourself in a position where you won't be aware that it's there, where you'll be blinded to it, but God's going to shine it. When we have this failure, it can affect how comfortable I am in being loved. That's the first thing now. God is offering me love. We started on that. So what's the effect of this? When I have sin within me, I can fully reject any love. I can allow myself to grow to a point where no love is going to break into my life. And I was there. I know that. Where I'm going to feel totally unlovable. Where I'm going to be certain that God hates me, if there is a God, that he's going to send me to hell. So one of the results of sin is, at its worst, it can put me in a position where I accept no love from God at all. He's given it, but I refuse, or I am unable to feel it. I can refuse it, or I can just build up so strong a feeling that I'm unlovable, or that I can look so strongly elsewhere that I absolutely break from God's love. I don't want his. Even if there is a God, I don't want his love. I want it all from the world alone. That's one way. But it doesn't usually happen clearly that way. What generally happens is what I described happened with Adam and Eve. There are areas of me that I don't think God should love. I mean, he shouldn't love my greed. He shouldn't love my materialism right now. My softness, my laziness, my quick-tempered. God's not supposed to love those things. He's supposed to love my zeal, my dedication, the time I put into reading Scripture. Yeah, let him love those things. But that's not it. See, there's areas. The first effects of sin is we limit God's love. Here's me. And I'm just going to say, okay, now God's love is supposed to come into this area here only. I don't say this clearly, but I really feel inside me that God is only pleased with part of me. So generally, the sin basically inside me usually makes me feel uncomfortable. Certain areas
with God's love coming into my life. But as I've tried to share, it cannot hurt God. He's perfect, and he can't be affected. We can give offense to God. Now, sin can do that, but he won't accept the offense. You know, you can't insult me. You can try to, but unless I accept the insult, it isn't working. We can try to offend God. Now, that's where, in a sense, that term meant that people were looking at it from man's viewpoint, but we ought to never look at these things that strongly from our viewpoint, but look at it from God's. We haven't offended him at all. We try to. You know, oh my God, I'm heartily sorry that I tried to offend you, and I'm pretty doggone happy that you're so loving that you didn't take offense and you've been loving me all this time. By the death of Jesus, I see that. So sin will affect my ability, as far as God relating to me, it will affect my ability to feel God's love, either complete, there are moments when we can be absolutely out of love, or partially. But it doesn't touch God. As far as our relationship to self, we've shared that, well, let's go to our relationship to others first, the world out here. Especially those in the church, because we have a deep unity with those, as we showed when we looked at the sacraments of baptism, confirmation, and Eucharist, the sacraments of unity, three levels in the church. Sin can affect the way I relate to the world. It can turn it around. I'm supposed to give love to the world. Instead, I will take from the world. So instead of properly giving you love, I'll use you. And this is where this sick draining can occur. Husband and wife, parents and children, neighbors, can have it a dozen different ways. It can also enable me, when others try to give me the love that they want, and to live a kind of unity, I can feel unlovable. I can feel, because of sin in my life, that I don't deserve any love. And no matter how much people try to really establish a real unity, it isn't going to work because of the effects of sin. Or there's parts of me. The thing I said, the game playing, shows that there's parts of us that we're not going to allow the world to be one with. We're going to play games. We're going to talk about weather. We're going to talk about sports, just to keep people far away. I mean, sometimes it's just natural conversation, but other times we'll talk about rather than real sharing, because we don't want people to touch us. Why? Because there's many parts of us that we don't feel lovable. We do want a relationship with them sometimes, but not a full one. Not one of us, because we're ashamed of our nakedness and we're trying to hide it from one another. So this is certainly one of the effects of sin. Now, it becomes very, very bad, and this is crucial to understand why this sacrament. Now, the next statement. My sin affects you, and your sin affects me. And that's why we have the sacrament of penance or reconciliation. That's why it's always been in our church. Now, I mean, that's one of the needs of it. There are many other reasons. In Baltimore, there's an area called the Block, and it's internationally famous. There's, well, for about four or five blocks in a row, every place is either a strip bar, a pornography store, or a house of prostitution on both sides of the street. Anybody going into any of those places makes it easier for everyone else. As a matter of fact, in a sense even, every Christian walking the street in curiosity, as everybody who's ever been a seminarian there sure has, just to see what it was like, we'd all go down. Any Christian walking the street of that area makes it easier for everyone else to go down and discover in an unfortunate way that sex can just be a thing rather than a way of expressing love. Because if every mature person who was receiving love just stayed blocks away from the block, anybody there would, the few people there would feel very, very uncomfortable. And people would find it much, much more difficult. When a regular kind of person would just go in for a drink in that bar, he's helping to keep this whole institution going. Or to put it another way, if there's a woman's group, when the women start talking and running someone down, it is very, it doesn't just have to be a woman's group, it's very, very difficult to fight the trend, to swim against the tide, and to say something nice about that person. There's a pressure on you to join in and tear apart her reputation. That's what I mean, that my sin makes it easier for you to sin. What we have is a whole level, we're lowering the standard. What's this group doing? Is it really respecting people and their reputation and their dignity? Not. You know, let's tell juicy stories. But if I really want to say something nice about that person, boy, you're just going to be, it's nearly impossible with some groups. Well, that's how each individual sin builds up sort of an atmosphere of sin. One of the saddest things is when you run into a parish where the whole parish has sort of accepted a lower standard of what Christianity should be. And it's everybody's sin kind of reinforcing everybody saying, hey, it's okay to live this way. And they're all losing because of what they're doing. I forgot where it was, but I ran into a very strong instance. Oh, just this week someone came to tell me how he had, after quite a few years of a fabulous marriage, been unfaithful to his wife. And he said that the strongest single reason that he could find was the crowd of people he ran around with. It was a particular job that he got where everybody drank and cheated on their wife, and there was a pressure to do it. And they're all talking about it and bragging about it and pressuring him. And it's very difficult to stand then. I think I shared this last time. It's a nice phrase. I heard it, dead bodies float with the current. Live bodies only can swim against it. Only a living person can swim upstream. So if you're going against the current, you're alive. If you're getting carried with the current, you might be dead inside. Just as an application here, and it certainly happened to him. Therefore, what I do affects you. And when I say that I'm sorry, when we get to forgiveness, it's perfectly okay to have forgiveness with God and to forgive myself. But if my sin, to the degree that my sin hurts you, if I really want to turn around the direction I'm living, I got to do something to undo the damage I've done you. And that's why a separate sacrament is needed. The ultimate reason, and that's the biggest reason that the church has had it, to help us undo some of the harm that we've done to one another. Sin, therefore, makes it easier for other Christians to give weaker witness. I mean, heck, well, look at everybody. We're keeping up with the Joneses. Just look at the jewelry we flash at Mass and see where our values are. Look at the cars we drive. Look at the way we can ignore as a community and as a parish people who are hungry. Look at the way we can ignore the poor. Look at the way we can ignore the aged. Look at the way we can ignore our orphans. Look at the way we can have so many people with their guts nearly busted in Enid. And we can just gather as well as every other church Sunday after Sunday and be pretty well pleased with ourselves. And this is almost, it does, it tells us that it's okay to ignore these needs. If you really want to know that, just ask yourself, when you think of any of these needs, what would the Master do? And he sure wouldn't say it's okay to ignore these needs. But we all feel this way because we're all doing it as a church. And so we start lowering our standards. And it would be unbelievable how low some of these standards. I had the misfortune to meet a chaplain who told me every night he was at the bar, and it was at least, I don't know how many nights, but they would have topless dancers in this bar, in the NCO or the officers club, whichever it was, two, three, or four nights a week, and he'd be there. And he told me it was good for the morale of the troops. Might have been good for their morale, but for their morality, it was scandalous. The scandal being something you trip over. He was telling them it was okay to look at a woman as if she is sheerly a thing. And when I look at anybody as a thing, that's the ultimate form of hatred and of hurt. And I just had no respect for him at all on this score. But that's in essence what all of us do. You go to if a bunch of Christians go out to a topless bar, the husband's telling his wife, this is what I think a woman is. And the wife's saying, it's okay for you to feel this way. And they're telling the people across the table, this is okay for Christians to look at somebody being used sheerly as a thing this way. I have some... The reason this would appear to me so strongly is, I think I've shared with you, I have some friends who have functioned as prostitutes. And it's just so sad to see and to talk with a woman who for a period of her life has been used simply as a thing to satisfy men. And to see the total lack of any respect that she feels during that period of her life and the way in she can only protect herself by hating the men who use her this way. Because it's the only way that any of us that I know of can defend ourselves against such a total destruction of our worth. So when we do this, this is the effects of sin. We lower the whole morality of the whole group. This, as I'm telling you, is crucial to understand. And it's one aspect of sin that hasn't much been dealt with. If it could be, for example, many Protestants have no concept of the social effect of sin. Otherwise, they could never say that they could simply go into their room and pray to God for forgiveness, and that's all they need. That can only be said by a person who is, and that would include most Catholics too, who are absolutely unaware that my sin is a robbery of you. That no matter what the sin is, even if it's just in my own mind, that would be jumping down a little bit. This is clear for failures that become external because we can contribute to a whole atmosphere, sort of like we're polluting the spiritual air that we're all breathing. So we're all developing a spiritual emphysema and we're just unaware of it. Well, it's clear that if I pollute the air and affect you this way spiritually, that I've got some responsibility. But how about for my own internal failures, the things that stay within me? Well, you see, if I'm just filled with thoughts of sexual thoughts, just using you in my own mind, at that moment I'm not allowing God's love to come in and develop me. So in the long run, I'm cheating you of the love that I owe you in the development of my person. Besides this, after this, it makes it much rougher for me to deal with you as a loving person. So in the now, I'm becoming less, and in the future, I will have less to offer you. I'm really becoming less a person, less a Christian, and I'm cheating you of all I could be. If, from the very first moment of my life, I allowed all the love that was offered me and all of my Father's love to flow through me, there's just no possible way that I could describe how much more of my talents I would have wanted love to develop
and how much more may I be able to offer you at this moment. Every sin of my past is cheating you as I stand here at this moment, because I didn't develop myself as I should. And each of you could have been so much richer in my life. Now, all of this can still be overcome, because you see, I can offer you at this moment not just my own talents. I can allow the love of Jesus. He can change all this, okay? I can allow the love of Jesus, and he can touch you the way you're supposed to be touched. You can allow me the love of Jesus, and you can touch me, therefore, the way my Father wants me to be touched by you. But I'm still far less a person. My sin has still cheated you. And so it isn't enough to go up to my room and say, "Sorry, God, now I'm forgiven." When I realize that sin is social, if I'm just saying, "Sorry, God," that way, I'm not really sorry. If I really want to change and undo the harm I've done, I've got to want to go out and try to do something in the community to undo it. So sin, therefore, to come back to what we talked about before, is not something. It is a refusal to be someone. Sin is my refusing to be fully the person that God called me to be, allowing his love to flow through me, as I shared with you how improper our examination was. Did I do it? Was it serious? How many times did I do it? The nice thing about that is, see, it put it out here like a germ. You know, sin was like a spiritual bug. Okay, God, did I have a big bug or a bad bug? You know, was it a fatal bug? Was it a terminal case at that moment? Or was it just, you know, a light one? And how am I going to name this particular bug? It's nice looking at the action out there, taking the action almost like a TV scene, a movie scene. I had something to do with it, yeah. But it's the action. My maybe the words I said to you, losing my temper and throwing something at you, or stealing something from you, that action, that's the sin. And so it's okay. It's out there, and I can quickly have God kind of wash it over, and it's all done. But the real sin's in here. And that sticks with me, see. You can't just wash away me. That's in here, and that can't be rounded out. And there's no escape from there. There is no escape that any man can have. I can walk away from the its. I can say these actions are yesterday and I'm living now. But when the sin is me and those actions were just a failure of me to be the person I was supposed to be, and that carries into the present, then I can't walk away from that, and I can't say that was yesterday, because that yesterday affects me today and continues to frustrate me today. I'm shrunken in the amount of love I can receive today because I didn't receive everything I was supposed to yesterday. And I'm stuck with that. And until and unless we understand this, we're not going to understand the gravity of sin. And this is probably the great need of our time. Because as Dr. Menninger from the Menninger Clinic wrote in his book when he came out with it about 4 or 5 years ago, Whatever Happened to Sin? America today has lost its idea of sin. We've lost it completely. Or very, very much. We've lost a real understanding of the gravity of this. In the Catholic Church, from our old theology, our sin, our failure to be, could be divided into two groups. It could be mortal, which means deadly, which means love has been killed, or venial. And that's a terrible term because it meant small. And a lot of people think that a lot of sins weren't very important. If my failure to love has reached the point where I refuse to accept God's love for any reason, then love has been killed as a reality in my life, and I am in. If you want to use that term, these words are not going to be used much in the future. Right at the moment, we don't know whether we want them or don't want them in the Catholic Church, and that will become clearer a little bit next time, some of the problems. Now they'll talk about grave
sin, but all of us who are older were raised on this mortal venial. The mortal meant you didn't have any of God's love, which meant you were going to hell. Grave and the other one, that's not as bad. They're different terms. I believe this. I believe this one very, very much. Mortal sin is being in that condition. Remember, sin is me. Mortal sin is being in that condition for whatever reason where love cannot enter my life. Now, God is he who is in the process of loving. And if love can't enter my life, then I'm not allowing God to be in my life. And when I am not in God's presence, I'm in hell. There's only two places anybody can be, hell or heaven. And purgation, we've talked about, it has its own place to help us at any moment experience heaven. But two, if I block out all love for my life, that's hell. And they're not after death things only. They begin now. If you're aware of love, then you're experiencing wonder. If you're aware that this love is a manifestation and a touching of God coming into your life, then you're really knowing that you're in heaven. When you block out this love, then you know what hell is. And if you're living as I did, where God's love can't come in, where you don't have any love for yourself, and you won't let anyone else love you, you're living absolutely without love coming in and going out. That's hell. And it's real. And that's a state, definitely, no questions asked, of mortal sin. Of sin being so present in a life that there is no love. It has killed love. There's just the hell of being lonely. Not liking yourself and having no recourse, no way to get out. Because you won't let God's love in and you won't let anybody else's love in. Till God breaks down the door.